Welcome to Original Lines. I'm your host, Laura Allen, and today I'll be talking with Fisher poet Patrick Dixon. Patrick is well known among the Pacific Northwest Fisher poet community. He's been performing and publishing poetry and personal essays centered around the fisherman's life for quite a while. He's also won or been shortlisted for quite a few awards, including the Morris Memorial Chapbook Competition and at least two of Fish Publishing's annual anthologies. He's had work published across a wide spectrum from magazines such as National Fisherman and Oregon Coast to literary journals like CERC. Hello, Pat, and welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you, Laura?
Doing great. How are you?
Good.
Yeah,
good.
It's really good to have you.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah, yeah. I met Pat at the Auburn Literary Festival over the summer of 2017, and he was one of the featured readers there, and I was very interested to talk to him, so glad to be here.
All right. I'm glad you're here.
Can you tell us how did you become a fisher poet? How did that happen?
Well, I was a commercial fisherman in Cook Inlet, Alaska. I commercial fished for salmon. I was a drift fisherman. And I got into that in 1977 when my first skipper hired me as a deckhand. And 2 years later, I ended up buying into the fishery. I had my own 32-foot fishing boat and went out every summer. And I taught up. We lived up there in Kenai, Alaska. And I was a teacher. I taught special ed for a while, and then I also taught journalism and English and yearbook and ended up teaching drama. But I taught for 23 years, and I fished for 20. And when we left and came down here, I had just retired from teaching and gotten a job teaching at Evergreen State College. And I was a photography teacher. And we were ready to leave Alaska after 23 years. The winters were getting longer and darker and not as much. We weren't recreating as much in the snow.
Right.
So what ended up happening is we moved down here. I taught for 6 months at Evergreen and had a period of about 2 years where I was hoping to set up a photography business, but not knowing anyone and not being that connected to the community, it wasn't going very well. And at the same time, we made the decision to sell out of commercial fishing because I didn't want to be the commuter fisherman that left his family and went up and spent months at sea, right, with the family down here. And our boys, we have two boys, and at that time they were 15 and 11. And so I didn't want to be an absentee father for that amount of time. So we sold the boat and permit. So I lost my identity as a teacher. I lost my identity as an Alaskan, and I lost my identity as a commercial fisherman.
Wow.
And it was a major struggle for quite a while. And one of my good friends who I made friends with him in Alaska many years ago and had moved down to Gig Harbor, and he was commuting. He was doing he fished for years after I did. Anyway, he knew that I was in the middle of a pretty serious depression. Mm-hmm. About a year in, I was struggling mightily, and he knew it. And he called me up one day and he said, "I know of this thing that's happening in Astoria called the Fisher Poets Gathering." And this was February of the second year. It was 1998, 99, and 98 was their first year ever of doing it. And he said, let's go down there. Come with me and let's go down there. And I have been writing poetry. Poetry for me is a lot of times I call it emotional vomit. when you're feeling terrible, a lot of poets write those feelings down to get rid of them. And I was doing a lot of that. But I was working on the craft and I really felt kind of at sea. And so we walked into the Wet Dog bar and cafe. And that's where the Fisher Poets gathering began. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at guys in extra tough boots and fishing slippers and stormy seas float coat jackets. And they're talking and they're getting up on stage and talking into a microphone, men and women, about mm-hmm. commercial fishing. And for the first time in the year and a half I'd been down here, I felt at home. The first night, it didn't take me more than a couple of hours of sitting in the audience before I got up and took my journal into the back room and started writing down what I was feeling. And the next night I read it during open mic. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning. That was the start. And I've often told the people who started it and a lot of my good friends that I've made through Fisher Poetry, Fisher Poets really helped heal me from that time and get me kind of on the track. And I now know more commercial fishermen throughout the country than I ever knew as a fisherman in Cook Inlet. And so it's really been gratifying in that way. And it did help me heal. So
yeah.
That's a long answer to your question.
No, that's wonderful. it seems like it's a really tight-knit community, or at least a really active community. New York Times had an article. Yeah. American History website had an article on the Fisher Poets Gathering. There were BBC Radio.
Yeah,
I found a link.
They came one year, yeah.
It just seems to really capture the imagination. And it seems like a really interesting community to be part of.
It is a wonderful community to be part of. And I've been fortunate enough that I have enough technical expertise that I can help. Because one of the things that I've always in my life been enthusiastic about is getting behind a cause I believed in. And so I volunteered to put up the In the Tote website, www.inthetote.com. And it is basically a site where you can go hear Fisher Poetry by the Fisher Poets that are on stage. You can see videos of them reading, and you can read their writings. And so my goal was to have it get an online presence so that people who might be considering having a show or something like that could see what it's like and possibly invite people to come, that kind of a thing. And it's been really successful. So I manage the website, and I also help with the fisherpoet.org website. And in terms of, getting the word out on Facebook, we have two Facebook pages, Fisher Poets Facebook page and Friends of Fisher Poets Facebook page. So there's a shameless plug.
Good. Like shameless plugs. well, it seems I'm from Texas. You probably noticed the accent. It's definitely not Pacific Northwest, but we have the cowboy poets in Texas. And it seems like, and I've known a couple. One was a really good friend of the family, and he goes all over the country doing the cowboy poetry. And it seems like, from what I've seen from the Fisher Poets, they have at least one thing in common, and it's not just a love. It's an intersection, right? But there's also a very deep love of the lifestyle.
Yes,
a very, very deep love of the subject matter of the actual of the fishing life.
Yeah.
And the cowboy poetry. It's the cowboy. So there's something to me that comes out in the poetry that it's a different vibe than you get when you have like the cowboy poetry or the fisherman poetry. There's something very vital about it to me. Have you ever heard any cowboy poetry?
We have a cowboy poet that comes to Fisher Poets as our token cowboy, and he wears his 10-gallon hat and he doesn't call it a bandana, but I can't remember right now what he calls the thing around his neck. And the cowboy boots, and he basically what happened was two of our Fisher Poets went to the Cowboy Poets Gathering years ago, and here was Ron McDaniel, this is the story I've heard they have several different stages and small rooms where people perform, and he was there pretty much by himself, and so they sat down, and he was in the audience with them, and they started asking him questions, and they struck up a friendship, and then they heard him perform, and they said, "You've got to come to Fisher Poets. We want you there." And he has been he's a rock star. He has been a hit, and he's one of the most popular people we've got. He's a wonderful poet, and he has very poignant poetry, and he has very humorous poetry, and he's always a hit. So we have heard it, but I have never been, but according to what I've heard, the Cowboy Poets Gathering people perform other people's work, and some of it's rooted deep in history. And so there's that aspect of it. Fisher Poets, we rarely perform other people's work unless it's like to honor somebody who's passed or something like that. It's usually original content by us. And the only requirement for being, for performing on stage is that you have material and that you have been actively involved in the fishery as somebody who works in the fishery, not necessarily a processor. Mm-hmm. And so it's the workers, the deckhands, the cannery workers, and the fishermen. And so you don't necessarily have to be doing it now. You just have to have done it. Mm-hmm. And so that way, one of the neat things is that we have authentic voices.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Not that non-cowboy or fisher poetry isn't necessarily authentic, but there's a vitality, I think, that is Yeah. As in these, in,
and I know Ron's poetry is very much that way mm-hmm. in terms of, you know that what he's talking about is something that has actually happened, mm-hmm. you know.
It's a deep engagement.
It is a deep engagement. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think we do have that in common. And the funny thing was, is that Ron, just a short story, Ron one year went up fishing in Bristol Bay as a set netter just to see what it was like. And he and his son were on a trip to Alaska. And so they stopped by one of the fishermen's sites and he fished for basically a week and they had a huge run and they worked the entire time and he came back and he wrote a poem about it. When he performed the poem, he had taken rain gear and he had cut it in half vertically.
Oh.
And so he put on half a coat and half a pants with one suspender and one cowboy boot and one rubber boot. And then he talked about how he now was split down the middle. So yeah. it was great. So, but anyway, yeah, we do have an affinity for each other.
In your experience, do you have people that will engage with you as a Fisher poet when you're talking about the commercial that wouldn't engage with poetry on just sort of a, you know, like a literary poetry that's just kind of about flowers or whatever?
I think we do.
Does it engage more people?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, I don't know about more people. I think there are a lot of people who engage with poetry, period.
True.
But I think that people who work understand what working poetry is. You know, it's the love of the craft, the love of the adventure, you know, and I mean, if you love a good sea story, then, right. you know, we've got lots of that at the Fisher Poets Gathering. And one of the things I should say is that many of us don't write poetry. We tell stories or we write down narratives that things, you know, stuff that's happened and that we have a lot more to offer than just people standing up reading poetry. And some of it's good stuff. Some of it's not so good, but it's, like I say, it's all authentic. And it's, and when you go as a whole and you experience the whole weekend and it's a Friday and Saturday night all night long, you get a real well-rounded representation of all the different types of commercial fishing there are. And, but they all have that thread in common of adventure and hard work. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like for you that it was sort of a perfect crossover because you'd already done literature, you're already in the arts with the photography and everything, and then you had done the commercial fishing, and it just sort of was this confluence of things for you to be a Fisher poet. Does it feel that way? Was it just sort of inevitable for you?
Well, I think in some ways, yeah. You know, once it happened that I discovered it, then it was hard to, you know, I mean, I've never missed a Fisher Poets Gathering since. And one of the memories I have is in the first few years, I recall, you know, basically what you've got is you've got Friday night and it's Saturday all day. They have workshops and then the evening everybody performs again. Mm-hmm. And then Sunday we have a farewell mic and we all get up and just read something short, one short poem. And I remember saying goodbye to everybody. And, you know, you make these friends and over the weekend you bond really well with them. And so after 4 or 5 years, it was like, on Sunday, I remember I went out for lunch and then I drove by all the venues as I was going through town and there was nobody on the sidewalk. And it was just this, I was going, a whole year? I have to wait a year to do this again? And so I started thinking hard about trying to get smaller Fisher Poet events during the rest of the year. And eventually I got some folks. My wife was the lifestyle and enrichment director at Panorama, the retirement community over in Lacey. And they have a wonderful stage auditorium. And so she hired us to basically come up and perform. And we had we get 5 or 6 people every year. And then Harbor Days, which is our annual Labor Day celebration of the maritime industry and tugboats in Olympia, we do 2 shows that weekend, one at Panorama and one in Olympia. And so it started that here's a small group and basically I invite whoever's available and more or less. And then another show started on Memorial Day in Westport and one of the Fisher Poets in Kodiak actually got people to donate air miles and fly folks up for one in April. April in Kodiak, that's a trip. and then they've started recently. We just had our second show in Bellingham, and Port Ludlow started a show. And so now there's they're happening all throughout the year, which is wonderful because you get to, and then there's also one in Seattle where we've coupled with the Maritime Museum at Kodiak and the Seattle Museum of History and Industry.
Okay.
We perform on the Virginia Five, which is a steamship. We're performing on a boat and we're a bunch of fishermen and it's like, couldn't be better.
That's really cool.
So yeah, it's just grown as a result. It's way more satisfying to see it doing that. And one of my goals is to try and get us over to Europe because apparently, especially in the UK, there are a lot of maritime festivals and I think we could do well over there.
Right.
So I would love to have that happen, but so far not yet.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, would you like to, we're going to have to take a little break pretty soon, but would you like to read something for us?
Do
you
have sure.
A, okay, I'd love to hear something.
Yeah, this is one I wrote after I had left fishing and I'm looking back. And so it has several things in it that are experiences that I had, but that I didn't have them all at the same time, which is kind of obvious during it. But it's called Mending Holes. And it's for a friend of mine who I fished with named Lee Todd. I touched the past even as it disappeared before me. I placed my hands upon the backs of ours, loaded heavy with gear, and pushed them down an elevated boardwalk toward oblivion. I mended holes in the days with a needle and twine, swatted mosquitoes like seconds as summer sped beneath me. I painted coats of the present upon planks of history, then years later spent months of chainsaws cutting them into pieces, bulldozing them onto the beach, where I lit the match that burned them to ashes. I even hoisted a beer in their honor. I've seen compasses lose direction, watched a fleet of seasons sink over the horizon, seen sail give way to power, wood give way to glass, species disappear under thick coats of oil, and lifestyles vanish beneath politicians' dark coats. I pulled decades of tradition onto shore, put them on barrels, and walked away, leaving them to decay. Winter storms weakened them, summer sun bleached them, and I returned years later to feel them crumble between my fingers. What my eyes have forgotten, my hands remember. Cool, wet cotton gloves, stiff, rough manila line, and the heavy chains of anchors covered in generations of mud. I lean into the cool plastic of this buoy. Like seconds into hours, it gives before resisting, and reminds me that ebbing times, with all the gear, work, and fish, are like a boat on a set in a strong tide. From on board, all we see is the set. But from anywhere else, the boat and net grow smaller as they drift into the distance.
Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah.
We'll be right back. Hey there. Do you know that you can find Original Lines on both iTunes and Stitcher? So whether you have an iPhone or Android, you can always catch the latest episode. Be sure to subscribe to us, and please, we love reviews. Thanks. Hi there. We're back with Patrick Dixon, Fisher Poet. Okay, well, we've talked a little bit about the Fisher Poets Gathering, a little bit about how you became a Fisher Poet, and you mentioned in there that you also are a photographer. And do you still do much photography, or are you...
Not as much as I used to, but I still do. One of the things that I love to do is I love photographing at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so my son is also a photographer, and he and I oftentimes plan excursions around the Perseid meteor showers or that kind of a thing. And so we'll go up to Mount St. Helens or Rainier, wherever we can get a good view of the night sky without a lot of ambient light, and we'll photograph and do a lot of that. And we also love doing landscape photography. And so, I think on our agenda is to try to get to the northeast corner of Oregon and photograph the canyons that are over there and that kind of a thing. So we like, I don't, but like I say, I don't do it as much as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I spend a lot more time in my chair at my desk trying to figure out how to craft words, but it's still fun, and I still mess around a lot on the computer in Photoshop and Lightroom and some of the programs I use to edit photos still. Yeah.
Well, I've never met a creative person yet that only had one medium.
Right.
it doesn't seem to work that way. It seems to have multiples. Do you feel like they feed into each other at all? I know you have like one book that has both your photography and your poetry in it.
I do.
And do you feel like the photography and the poetry are related to you?
I mean, very much so. Yeah. I think they're the same beast, just a different interpretation of whatever creative thing you want to say. And ekphrastic poetry, mm-hmm. the poetry written to images, is something that I've done with some of my own photographs. Cirque published one that I was particularly proud of. It was a black and white of a mountain, and I wrote a poem to it. And so that was kind of neat. But yeah, I enjoy doing both for, I think, the same reasons. First of all, I love to experiment. And, mm-hmm. and so I think that's one of the reasons I've always loved Photoshop is I try to take some of the tools that they design in Photoshop, and the engineers have one thing in mind, and I like to play with it and see, well, what'll it do if I do it in a different way or uh-huh. a different application. And that's always fun. Photography has always been, for me, a self-discovery kind of a thing. And just, even with the camera, see what comes into focus or, you know, I also love macro photography for that very reason. This is to see some of the things you can see that you don't normally pay attention to. And boy, you can say the same thing about poetry is, you know, you look at things, I think, poets, that's what they do, is they look at things in microcosm and try to, and then from going to something, writing about something specific, it becomes more universal. And so, yeah, it works, but works the same way in both mediums. Yep. So.
Well, have you always kind of had that drive to make art of various types?
As long as I can remember. I got given a camera, a little miniature spy camera my parents got me for Christmas one year when I was, I think, I was 5 years old. And I've always wanted to write. Ever since I discovered that there was such a thing as creative writing, I think I started my first book about a horse, when I was like 7 or 8 years old. You know, I have no idea whatever happened to that manuscript, and I don't think I want to know. But I have always been interested in both those things, and yeah, and it's just been something that as I don't know why, but that's I've always connected to that. Mm-hmm. So,
why do you think that people make art in general? I mean, why do you think we do this? I mean, people, we make so many things and so many beautiful things.
You know, there's one train of thought that says there's no such thing as an original idea. We always borrow from other people. But we do create original ideas every time we make something our own and do it in our own way, in our own fashion. And I think that anybody who's interested in exploring who they are as a person and has introspection gets more of that when they find out what they're looking for, you know, and that's one way to discover it, is to do it through a lens or to do it through a poem. What do you write about? You know, I taught photography for years, and I also taught at the college level here at SPSCC. And one of the things that I always recommended to my students, even in the digital world, is print out a contact sheet of your work and then turn it upside down and ask yourself visually what you're seeing. Are you seeing triangles? Are you seeing repeated lines? Are you seeing curves? You know, everybody has their own palette in terms of color, but also in terms of design and what they're attracted to. And then once you start seeing those things and recognizing those things, then you have to decide, do I want to continue to do that? Mm-hmm. Or would I like to break that mold or whatever? You're in total control. And I always told my students, you're responsible for 100% of the image. You've got that rectangle. Everything in there is yours, and you, it's a conscious decision whether to leave it or take it out. And now with Photoshop, you get to, you know, if you're making art and not doing representational journalism or something like that, where you don't mess with it at all because of the truth involved, then you, if it's art, then it's your truth, and you get to decide how you're going to interpret it. And that's certainly true of poetry, yes. All the way through. So, yeah. And, yeah, I think that desire of people to create is a desire to express themselves and to find out about themselves.
Well, so you've got a couple of books published. We just talked about one that was a combination of your photography. And tell me a bit about your books.
Well, Swimming with Fish and Other Animals is the book you're talking about. Uh-huh. I think I published that in 2004. It was self-published. Mm-hmm. I had a long conversation with one of the guys who inspired the Fisher Poetry Gathering, Clem Stark. And Clem Stark's been published, I think he's got 7 or 8 books now, and he's won awards. He's probably one of the best, very best living Oregon poets. He lives in Dallas, Oregon. And, okay. And he writes a lot about work, and that's kind of what inspired John Broderick, the guy who's made the first phone calls to start the Fisher Poet Gathering. John tells the story that he went to a reading of Clem's with his English class in high school, and then he came away and he said, "We could do that. We can write about work," and mm-hmm. That's how we began. Clem and I had a conversation shortly before I published Swimming with Fish. And I was going, what do you think? Should I send it off? And he goes, well, he said, here's a story. He said, he showed me one of his books, and he said, this book won an award. He said, I first gave it to the publisher, who is the son of the publisher and who works in the industry, is a good friend, a friend of mine. And so I gave it to him, and he said, oh, yeah, we'll publish this. And it took 6 years. Mm. And it ended up winning awards. And then G said, if you want to wait that long, then by all means, start submitting. And I went, I don't want to wait that long.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to work Adobe's InDesign program and put together the book on my own and published it online with a printing service called 48hourbooks.com. Mm-hmm. And they did a fantastic job. And I was really pleased with it, and the first printing of 400 copies sold out, and mm-hmm. I had another printing done, and so it's not necessarily in bookstores, but it's on my website,
right.
And then the second book is called Arc of Visibility, and that won the Morris Memorial Chapbook Award, and through the of all places, Alabama State Poetry Society. And so it's a smaller book, and it's all commercial fishing, where Swimming with Fish is half of it is about commercial fishing, and half of it is poems about other things, mm-hmm. family and other different things.
Right.
So those are the two books I've got.
Well, I congratulate you. I've taught creative writing. Also, I've done adult workshops and classes, with kind of self-selected adults that have come back to writing later. And everybody's always their question is, do I self-publish? Do I not? And there's so many different, you'll hear so many different opinions, so many different ways, but it's, if you just either, you can either hire someone to help do the design, or if you can learn to do the design yourself, there's absolutely no reason not to self-publish.
But on the other hand, I submit a lot of poems to individual journals, and like you mm-hmm. said earlier in the introduction, and to magazines. The CIRC Literary Journal is based in Anchorage, but they've been really good to me. They and most anytime I give them a submission of 2 or 3 poems, they'll publish at least one.
Yeah.
And so I feel real validated doing that. and it's nice to be able to get the work out there in other venues so people can see it rather than just in my book or online on the website.
Right.
One of my goals, it's really interesting because the Fisher Poet thing is, can be a blessing and a curse, one of my goals a couple years ago was to, okay, I've been published by the Fisher Poet community, and Oregon Coast published some of my stuff based on the Fisher Poets.
Right.
I've been in Fisher Poetry anthologies and that kind of a thing. What about the other poetry I write?
Right.
Because I'm not just, we're not just pigeonholed. None of us are. And I said, well, I want to make it a goal to get published by other journals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I subscribe to a mailing list that sends out calls for work. And mm-hmm. so when something seems to fit one of my poems that I've written, I'll send it off. And I've been really fortunate that I'm that's happening. You don't make a living doing this.
No.
but it's nice to know that people hear you and think that what you're saying is worthwhile. And,
right.
and that's the goal. And so I feel like I've done well that way, and hopefully we'll continue for a while.
Do you have any new projects that you're working on now?
I have I'm trying to sort through a group of poems that I have that, I mean, I've done two chapbooks. And so I've decided that I want to try and do a book length group of poems. And so it's the struggle right now with it is trying to sort out, you know, is it all commercial fishing poems? Is it not commercial fishing poems? I'd rather see a mix of just my best poetry, you know, selected poetry or whatever. But finding the thread that ties it all together is my challenge. And so I'm still working on that. And, one of the people who is a Fisher poet and a wonderful writer, and also a teacher of creative writing in Wenatchee, Aaron Freistad has agreed to help me try to sort it out, but I have to get her at least the body of work.
So right.
And she helped with Arc of Visibility immensely around this very table that we're sitting at. We had it all laid out, mm-hmm. and she helped me figure out how to get it to flow together. And she's a magician that way, and I really appreciate her. And so we're hopefully going to be working together. Once I get my part of it done, then I'll send it to her, and we'll see how that all goes. But that's the next goal, is to get something that's more of a book length, you know, 60 to 80 pages and something like that. So,
well, good luck to you. That's a big project. It's a different project.
Yes, it is. So.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I'd like for you to take us out with another poem. But before we do that, where can we find out more about you or read more of your work?
I have two websites that are mine. One of them is patrickdixon.net. And that's mostly about the writer and the writing. They're both linked together. So if you get to one, you can find the other. And the other one is pdixonphotography.com. And that one is my photography work and has some writing on it as well. But again, you can go back and forth. But there you go. Okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you. And we'd love to hear another poem.
Okay. This one has not been published yet. And the background for it was, you know, I spent 23 years living in Alaska and went up there, and I would have never become a commercial fisherman had I not been in Alaska. In fact, I grew up in Indiana and didn't even realize commercial fishing was still a thing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, you know, part of the past. And I went up there, and I remember sitting next to the harbor in Haines, Alaska at the top of the panhandle and looking out, you know, these aren't sailboats and they're not yachts because they're all covered with rust and they smell bad. What is this? And so I started asking around, and he said, that's a commercial fishing fleet. You can go out, you know, and you can get a job as a deckhand and go make money. And I've always loved boats. I've always been infatuated with boats, especially power boats. So it was just natural that I ended up in it. But I never would have done any of that had I not gone to Alaska. And so I wanted to honor Alaska. I went to I'm one of the board members of the Olympia Poetry Network. I just recently got elected, but I've been going to their meetings and workshops for a while. And one of the workshops I went to was a poetry of place. And one of the formats for a poem about place is a praise poem. And it can be about place, or it can be about other things too. But it seemed to make sense to praise Alaska and as a thank you for the things I went through there. And so this is that's where this poem came from, was directly from that workshop. This is called Praise Alaska. Praise the 1500 miles of gravel I drove. Praise the windshield shattered by rocks, lap sprayed with broken glass. Praise the mountains walked, tents pitched, camp coffee, and the 44 on my hip. Praise endless summer light. Praise swift glacial rivers threading turquoise through broad gravel beds. Praise the abundant North Pacific, home to beluga, humpback, gray, bowhead, orca. Praise each fish my nets caught and all they let pass. Praise my boats, how they floated even when they didn't run. Praise baked salmon, grilled salmon, kippered salmon, salmon jerky, smoked salmon, salmon berries, low bush, high bush, bog blueberries, glistening current. Praise the bears that ate them first. Praise the hurried race from breakup to terminal dust. Praise winter's chill, hoarfrost, 30 below, and silent snow. Praise the howl of wolves across the valley. Praise the gangly moose, head dipped beneath water, mouth streaming lily pads. Praise the caribou, crossing ice-burdened rivers, dodging flows, headed out with the tide. Praise the giant tides. Praise the white cloud clatter of snow geese rising from the flats. Praise the chortle of the sandhill, flight impossibly high under a midnight sun. Praise the eagle's chitter atop the spruce. Praise ravens rasp and croak. Praise totems and masks. Praise all who came before, from native to Russian to Chichaco to sourdough. Praise wilderness, the silence of woods. Praise the Arctic breeze. Praise, oh praise, the warm Chinook wind, the forget-me-not, the lupin, the fireweed-filled meadows. Praise nights wrapped in sleeping bag and blanket cocoons, stars streaking behind green curtains of northern lights. Praise the years I spent. Praise the days to come.
And that'll do it for today's episode. Thanks again to Patrick Dixon and to you, our listeners. Please like and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or other fine podcast services. And you can find out more about us at www.twoponiespress.com or look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you very much. See you next time.